Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Nick Otis, and I represent the defendant appellant, Kamani Fleming. Mr. Fleming has raised two issues on appeal, which we identified in our briefs filed with this Court, and additionally, the government has raised a preliminary matter as to whether Mr. Fleming's argument for reversal for his conviction as to count one is properly before this Court. Specifically, the government argues that the certificate of appealability is required for Mr. Fleming to be able to present his argument regarding count one.
So I would like you to start with that, because it seems to me this does come on a 2255, which is in a sense granted in part and denied in part. And as for the part of it that's granted, where he gets the resentencing, this is your first shot. And so our law would suggest you don't have to worry about certificates of appealability for that. That's from the grant. But as to the rest of it, the district court denies. There's kind of a generic, I'm denying everything else. And it would make this indistinguishable from a regular direct appeal if you just said, well, we get to open up everything. Don't you need to show that the criteria for a certificate of appealability are met?
Your Honor, respectfully, I under either whether this court determines that a certificate of appealability is required or this is a direct appeal, Mr. Fleming can make an argument that his conviction should be reversed. But as to whether or not
it's not a direct appeal from his conviction, because he already had that.
But it did affect his sentence, his resentencing, how the court determined whether or not he was a conviction as to count one.
You're asking us to grant a CA 2, I believe. Is that right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
You're asking us to grant a CA.
A certificate of appealability?
Yeah.
Yes, Your Honor. And even under that standard, this court has been clear that a notice of appeal can serve as a certificate of appealability.
But why does it meet the showing of a substantial showing of a denial of a constitutional right? You're correct. I mean, a notice of appeal implicitly will be seen as a request for a certificate of appealability, but I don't see how this satisfies the standards.
Well, it ties into the first issue that, in fact, was granted by the district court and the government conceded regarding the 851 motion. The 851 put him as a mandatory life sentence regarding...
Right, and then that gets erased by the part of the proceeding.
Presumably, the ineffective assistance of the counsel claim as to the 851 would apply to this as well, because presumably trial counsel would, and his direct appeal counsel would have concluded it would have been pointless to appeal this issue on direct appeal, because counts 4 through 6 would have also satisfied the mandatory life sentence, and he would have concluded.
But people don't do that. I mean, you know, they in fact will appeal against a particular count, because you never know, things can be set aside, you could get clemency. I mean, all sorts of things can happen.
Well, presumably, and maybe you are correct, Your Honor, and I guess to set the record straight, maybe his trial counsel and appellate counsel should have done that, but it wouldn't have mattered in the end. He would have had a mandatory life sentence.
I understand what you're saying.
And so presumably, and again, I don't know what they plan to do in that on that appeal, but the issue wasn't raised. The only issue raised was they went for the home run and tried to get all the counts reversed, and it was unsuccessful. But based on that, the fact that he didn't raise it because of the 851, this error wasn't harmless.
But it doesn't mean that you have the right to... I mean, people frequently think later on of other arguments they might like to make, let's say, against a conviction. But principles of finality suggest that you only get the one appeal unless you can get through the bar of the certificate of appealability requirement.
Well, again, Your Honor, I do think that we get by that, because there would have been no point, realistically, for him to appeal that on his direct appeal. Once it got overturned...
That's a strategy question, isn't it?
I suppose it is, but... I can imagine a discussion between counsel and the client.
At that end, I mean, there are always a lot of arguments one could make for one why didn't take an appeal, wasn't the right time, didn't have money, or what have you, right?
Certainly, Your Honor, but I guess getting back to the point, and it's our main point, is that it would have served no purpose and it would have been a waste, really, of the court's time because his counts 4 through 6 were sufficient to enhance that to a mandatory life sentence.
So maybe we should move on to his sentence, which is the part that we really can reach here. Why wasn't the district judge entitled to find that this course of conduct involved more than 4.5 kilos of crack?
Your Honor, what we request, or what the argument that we have raised, is that the district court didn't make sufficient findings based on case law. We will admit that the standard is much lower. It's a preponderance of the evidence standard, but it's, as the courts have stated, it's still a standard. And the indicted drug amount was about 83 grams, and then we get certainly 404 lets a lot of evidence come in, and there was certainly significant amount of evidence of drug transactions. But
he seems like a pretty big time dealer. I mean, you know, the indictments and the amount that you can finally prove are frequently quite different as long as you stay inside the statutory maximum, and there's certainly no argument that this sentence goes beyond it.
Your Honor, I don't disagree with you. Right. What the district court seemed to focus on significantly in their sentencing memorandum was the testimony of Jason Lucas, and he seemed to extrapolate, I think that was the word he used, was extrapolate from the testimony of Lucas, and essentially did, came up with this. And I think the reason they used 4.5 was that the sentencing guidelines back then, that was the threshold amount. That has since changed. But again, what I think would have been more appropriate was for the district court to identify specifically from that time that Jason Lucas was incarcerated, who was buying from him and in what amounts. It could, obviously could have changed. Maybe he stopped for a while. Certainly the government can rebut that by saying he was still, you know, we picked him up in August, you know, 6 months later. But ultimately there seems to be no recognition by the district court of.
But apparently, unless I have this wrong, his theory, your client's theory, as to why he didn't distribute as much drugs as the government charged, was that he would only have gone to Detroit with Mr. Lucas. He wouldn't have gone otherwise without Lucas, because Lucas was in prison. But the judge didn't believe that, right? He just rejected that. And if he's entitled to reject that, then the objection to the quantity collapses, right?
Yes, Your Honor, but he does have to make specific, the district court does have to make specific findings.
He gave a reason, it's brief, but he gave a reason why he thought that was unlikely, that Fleming would only travel with Lucas's, accompanied by Lucas. I don't know what more he could say.
Well, and additionally, they have to show that it's completely related conduct, and the testimony of Lucas was that it was at a different location. As long as the district court would have made findings along the way that this was a continuing drug dealer who did this over the course of time, I would feel more comfortable with it. But he essentially took Lucas's testimony and said that's what he did every month until he was picked up in August.
So do you think the district court was under an obligation to say during the period of time that Lucas was not involved, here's where I think he was getting it from, name a name or find a methodology?
Your Honor, I don't dispute that there was certainly testimony. There was testimony from individuals during the trial that they bought crack cocaine throughout portions of the year. But I think what we'd like to see is the district court make findings that, all right, they bought crack cocaine and they bought it in X amount so that we can arrive at that transaction. I mean, as we pointed out in the brief, we went 98% of the drugs that they used to enhance his sentence was uncharged conduct. And I think we just want specific findings from the court.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Mr. Otis. Yeah. Mr. Holler?
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, David Holler on behalf of the United States. I believe the court has outlined the issues pretty well for us already. We believe the court cannot review the challenges to count one of the defendant's conviction without granting a certificate of appealability in this case. And we also believe that there's no basis for it to do so, that the defendant has not shown the denial of a right. I mean, even if you were to sort of assume that there was some ineffectiveness in failing to raise the issue on the part of initial trial or appellate counsel, and that and beyond that, that he's correct on the merits of the issue, the simplest way to look at that is that drug quantity is a sentencing factor. It's not an element of the offense in the first place, and so it wouldn't justify reversing the conviction under any circumstances.
You would have to stay under the 40 years, though, wouldn't you?
You would, but that was done here. So because, we might be in a different situation if we were, if the whole thing had been denied, if there hadn't been the error with the 851 sentence, perhaps. But this court doesn't need to reach that issue, really, because of all the other hurdles. I think it just needs to take the quick look that we're suggesting, determine that there's nothing, no denial of a substantial showing of a denial of a constitutional right, and should stop right there and respect the procedural limitations that Congress put in place with the certificate of appealability limits, without reaching the merits of the claim. And really, you know, that then sort of prevents, since there could in theory be another 2255 based on the sentence, it prevents that 2255 from extending into the conviction as well. So that's perhaps why the government cares a little bit about the procedural issues here. The issue that we do believe is properly before the court is the one related to relevant conduct on the sentencing. But for the reasons that the court has already explained, we do believe that the findings that Judge Miller made here are sufficient and certainly do not establish clear error. The district court...
The question is whether he got too loose with his extrapolations at some point, because the Lucas testimony has some limitations, doesn't it?
Well, the Lucas testimony does have some limitations, Your Honor. At the same time, the district court did adopt the pre-sentence report in its entirety, which contains more details than the pre-sentence report in Bacalhau did by quite a large measure. It does essentially back up the extrapolation that the district court makes, and the district court is allowed to reasonably extrapolate from the testimony. Jason Lucas did – this also is not some witness out there who were relying on affidavits or hearsay. Jason Lucas testified at the trial. That's, I believe, part of the 404B evidence that was discussed on the first appeal. So the district court had the opportunity to observe him and determine his credibility, and Lucas did testify at trial that from December of 2006 to April of 2007, they were going to Detroit on a regular basis. There's also no reason to believe that these trips stopped because Lucas was arrested. I mean, under Lucas's testimony, Fleming is the leader, and Lucas is the assistant of sorts here. And Fleming has ties to Detroit. That is where he grew up. That is where he obtained his first conviction for cocaine dealing. So there's no reason to believe that because Lucas exits the picture, somehow the amount of cocaine that Fleming is obtaining declines. If anything, there's evidence in the record that suggests it increases, that suggests that as Fleming is moving from house to house, he's acquiring more customers. He gets to the point where he won't sell $10 or $20 bags, sort of the normal street-level sales. He's selling $40 bags of cocaine and up, which is more indicative of like a mid-level dealer who is selling to other. I mean, some of the other witnesses who testified were witnesses who said we're buying quantities for resale. So to that extent, if anything, it suggests that the amount is going up. And Judge Miller therefore says my conservative estimate is at a minimum it's staying the same. And if it stays the same, we're getting to the government's estimate, which is the government estimated 5.1 kilograms. That was made before the guidelines changed. And Judge Miller says, I find it's at least 4.5. Is it, is it completely tight? Perhaps not, but it's sufficient under these circumstances. And the other thing that I would point out, Your Honors, is that because Mr. Fleming's criminal history is so high, even if we were to find that the quantity was as low as 280 grams, his guideline range is still going to be unchanged. It's still going to be 360 months to life imprisonment. So to the extent that that's the case, there's simply overwhelming evidence that the defendant was distributing, you know, well more than that amount of crack over this time.
Can you get that number just from the times that Lucas is actually going with him to Detroit, the lower number you mentioned?
Yes, and in fact, the defendant's changed tack a little bit below, I think, in response to that point being pointed out, because initially he said if you just took Lucas's testimony conservatively alone, it comes to 1.7 kilograms. So he seems to now be suggesting maybe we shouldn't even tie this in. I guess I saw the defendant as more arguing that this Lucas stuff happened before the arrest offenses in August. But there are many witnesses. I mean, even the Tabitha Williams, who was the witness who testified about the actual controlled buys, she's buying from him in March before Lucas is arrested and continues to buy from him. She's initially buying herself, then she gets in trouble with the authorities and starts doing the controlled buys. She's buying consistently and buying those quantities throughout. So there's no reason not to tie this in. I think the district court has both made sufficient findings in his transcript and in his sentencing memorandum, and to the extent that that might be viewed as close to the line, relying on the pre-sentence report, which has additional information that he's allowed to adopt through the cases we cite, I think there's more than sufficient evidence here to justify that finding and to justify the ultimate sentence. If the court has no further questions, we would rest on our brief.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Holland. So, Mr. Otis, do you have anything further?
Getting back to count one, if this court does grant a certificate of appealability, this appears to be the first time that this court has addressed this issue of aggregation. And the Sixth Circuit's been very clear that aggregation is not appropriate because the way the statute reads, which states, in the case of a violation involving 50 grams or more, which contains cocaine base, the Sixth Circuit was clear where a defendant violates subsection A more than once, possessing less than 50 grams of cocaine on each occasion. Subsection B does not apply because there's no single violation involving 50 grams or more of cocaine base. Additionally, what we are requesting as to our second issue, we just simply request that this court find that the district court must make sufficient independent findings of all of the transactions to quantify the amount of drugs involved in Mr. Fleming's conviction and sentencing. For those reasons, Your Honors, we ask that you reverse as to count one and remand for sentencing appropriately. Thank you, Your Honors.
That's a relevant conduct. Of course, you've got this condition. It's got to be in the same course of proceeding or whatever. Should that apply to the other aspect that you're talking about? I mean, should we... Are you just saying that any aggregation at all is bad?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that for the jury instruction, that the supplemental jury instruction the district court gave to the jury stated that they could use any transactions during the period of the indictment. And I very clear from the evidence that of the four transactions that involved the indictment, none of them were more than 50 grams individually, but in the whole, they were, I believe, about 83 grams. And so we're requesting that those are, the court determined that those are four separate transactions that should not be aggregated. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Artis. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes, I was.
So we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client. We thank Mr. Holler as well. And the court will be in recess.